Our solemn worry was giving way, in spite of us, to joy and humor. When the nurse found the pile of pills Harding had sprinkled on Seafelt and the girl, we started to pop and snort to keep from laughing. And by the time they found Mr. Turkle in the linen room and led him out blinking and groaning, tangled in 100 yards of torn sheet like a mummy with a hangover, we were roaring. The big nurse took our good humor without so much as a trace of her little pasted smile. Every laugh was being forced right down her throat till it looked as if any minute she'd blow up like a bladder. McMurphy draped one bare leg over the edge of the sofa and pulled his cap down to keep the light from hurting his reddened eyes, and he kept leaking out a tongue that looked like it had been shellacked by that cough syrup. He looked sick and terrifically tired, and he kept pressing the heels of his hands against his temples and yawning. But as bad as he seemed to feel, he still held his grin and once or twice went so far as to laugh out loud at some of the things the nurse kept turning up. When the nurse went in to call the main building to report Mr. Turkle's resignation, Turkle and the girl Sandy took the opportunity to unlock that screen again and wave goodbye to all and go loping off across the grounds, stumbling and slipping on the wet sunsparkle grass. "He didn't lock it back up," Harding said to McMurphy. Go on after them." McMurphy groaned and opened one eye bloody as a hatching egg. "You kidding me? I couldn't even get my head through that window, let alone my whole body." "My friend, I don't believe you fully comprehend—" "Harding, goddamn you and your big words. All I fully comprehend this morning is I'm still half drunk. And sick. Matter of fact, I think you're still drunk, too. Chief, how about you? Are you still drunk?" I said that my nose and cheeks didn't have any feeling in them yet, if this could be taken to mean anything. McMurphy nodded once and closed his eyes again. He laced his hands across his chest and slid down in his chair, his chin settling into his collar. He smacked his lips and smiled as if he were napping. "Man," he said, "everybody is still drunk." Harding was still concerned. He kept on about how the best thing for McMurphy to do was get dressed, quickly, while old Angel of Mercy was in there calling the doctor again to report the atrocities she had uncovered. But McMurphy maintained there wasn't anything to get so excited about. He wasn't any worse off than before, was he? "I've took their best punch," he said. Harding threw up his hands and went off, predicting doom. One of the black boys saw the screen was unlocked and locked it and went into the nurse's station for the big flat ledger, came back out running his finger down the roll and lipping the names he read out loud as he cited the men that matched up with them. The roll is listed alphabetically backwards to throw people off, so he didn't get to the B's till right at the last. He looked around the day room without taking his finger from that last name on the ledger. "Bibbit. Where's Billy Bibbit?" His eyes were big. He was thinking Billy'd slipped out right under his nose and would he ever catch it. "Who saw Billy Bibbit go, you damn goons?" This set people to remembering just where Billy was. There were whispers and laughing again.